Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't
gamble.
I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast powered by FoxBet. NFL week, I think it's week 8, not quite sure. We'll figure it out as we go. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider.
Well, the board isn't very good. It's a positive. It's week 8, because God forbid if it was week 7 again, we'd be in trouble.
That's what I was going to say. We try and put those painful memories in the rearview mirror. I know a lot of our loyal listeners went, you know what? That best bet didn't get us to the window, but it was a lot closer than the final score indicated. I'm glad that they echo a lot of our same sentiments with the Oakland Raiders. Four big games that we'll break down today. We'll also roughly touch on the primetime game tonight between the Minnesota Vikings and the Washington Redskins. And, of course, the Sunday Night Football game with the Packers and Chiefs swirling with uncertainty as the franchise. Will he or won't he be out there under center for Andy Reid's offense? But Payne, before we get into some of the games, a little housekeeping to take care of. We have yet another 5K football free roll contest winner.
Yes, he goes by the name on Twitter of @TheRemBot. So congratulations to Remy. He's got 20 points so far this season, so he's actually in the season-long mix as well. So keep up the good work. The Rembot. That feels like something that he created while watching American Pie.
So you're going to compare him to like the Shermanator or something like that? I mean, is he looking for his Nadia?
I don't know. I don't think I'm going to ask him. But
no, I don't.
His name was Remy, and he goes by the Rembot. So good for him.
I don't know if we want to cross those particular boundaries. But I'll be honest, I'm not sure I want to cross some of the boundaries into the NFL card this weekend. That doesn't really look overly attractive, at least through our first pass. And didn't quite feel much better after a deep dive, but Payne, that won't stop us. So we may as well head out to Soldier Field to kick things off with the much maligned Chicago Bears, where the Bears are a 4-point favorite, total in the game 40.5 at
one
Fox
person.
Bet.
Out of the six-figure listenership, told you they liked your impersonation of whose name? What the hell is his name now?
Coach O?
No. Oh, was that the Coach O? No, I think you did a Chicago Bears one previously, and someone commended you for it, so you broke it back out.
George Went having to do. I mean, you grew up in Chicago. I wasn't a Bears fan. You're around all that stuff. So the Bears super fans, the Bulls super fans, you got to love it. You appreciate the Chicago style humor.
There you go.
All right.
There you go. What game are we talking about?
We're on the Bears Chargers, and I'm glad we're off the rails 2.5 minutes in today's show. So when we look at the Bears Chargers game, Payne, I want to start with the number here, and then we'll get into some of the X's and O's. We saw this number open a little bit higher. The Chargers immediately take money when this number popped. And you look at the assessment. The Bears closed as a 4.5-point favorite last week when they played host to the Saints, a game that they were thoroughly dominated from nearly start to finish. But now the market suggests, and it's not a fair assumption to make, that if you go off of the number here, and we haven't seen where it's going to close, that the Chargers are somehow a slightly better football team than the Saints, or is this just the market responding the way it maybe should have last week with Mitchell Trubisky under center trying to move this inept Bears offense?
Well, listen, there was sharp money on opposing sides, right? So we had a little sharp money at 3 come in on Chicago last week, forcing it to that number of 4.5. And not to spill the beans, but obviously there's sharp money on the Chargers this week as well. But when you look at that opening number of 5, it was really in line with the look ahead line from a week ago at 5.5, depending on where you like to look at your future numbers. So from that standpoint, there hasn't been significant movement, I don't think. I think when we break down this game a little bit, we're going to try to find out why the Chargers are getting hit a little bit, and could be a tough conclusion to get to. so, you know, that's kind of where we're at with the numbers. So there wasn't like this dramatic shift And I think there's probably differing views on how those teams looked. Obviously, Chicago was terrible, right? And we broke that down on Monday, first three quarters of the game, 85 total yards of offense. So a lot of the full game metrics were just junk time when the Saints went to prevent. And I think the idea out there that the Chargers got unlucky last week, probably not fully accurate as well.
Well, I can tell you one thing. Over the last three games that each of these teams played, they're amongst the bottom of the barrel in terms of running the football. The Bears at less than 44 yards per game. The Chargers at a robust 35 and a third yards per contest. We know about their offensive line issues that have been well chronicled. But let's focus on the Bears first and some of what's plagued them offensively. They're throwing the football this season, Payne, on 65% of their plays, sixth highest pass play percentage in the NFL. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out when Mitchell Trubisky is your starting quarterback, that's probably not going to be your best recipe for success. Now we can layer in one other component that I know you wanted to get to as well. The Bears defense is showing some frailty, and a lot has to do with a key absence along that defensive line.
I got to get off the old social media here. You got ADD. There's a lot of injury news coming in right now. It's very interesting. So when I look at the Bears defense, I think that's where you led us. Akeem Hicks is obviously a massive loss, and that's one that we've kind of outlined for a couple weeks now. When you look at this matchup, I think it's, you know, there's issues on both sides. There really is. Phillip Rivers is the only thing keeping the Chargers offense together right now. They're really bad up front. They're suffered some injuries up front. Pouncey at center's out. Forrest Lamp injured last week at left guard, so he's out. Now, Russell Okung also has you know, missed every game so far this season. And that's partly why the Chargers are having issues running the ball. That's why they're having issues protecting Phillip Rivers. He's been pressuring 40% of his dropbacks, fifth highest pressure rate among QBs with at least four games played. So zero push in the ground game. So let's see if the Chargers can take advantage of Akeem Hicks being out. When you look at what LA is doing, 30th in rushing efficiency, 32nd in rushing success rate, that's 8% below league average. They've actually faced one of the 10 easiest schedules of run defenses too. So, you know, Hakeem Nicks might not be missed in a spot like this. Now, all signs do point to Russell Okung returning. So I think that's probably big for Phillip Rivers. He probably loves getting his left tackle back. I do like what I saw late last week from the Chargers, kind of to my point about what they were doing early in that game. I like how they were using Austin Eckler. Past
Took
Keenan
him long
Allen.
Enough.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It's been brutal. But you look at kind of how he was used late in that game, right? And you look at what the Chargers have been struggling with injury-wise is depth to the receiver position. So when you have Keenan Allen, when you have Mike Williams, who's also battling an injury with his knee, there's not a lot of depth there. So they were designing like specific plays for Eckler as a receiver. And I think he was largely responsible for the offensive surge late in that game. I want to see if he split out wide a little more this week because I think it's absolutely needed. And honestly, like, you know, everyone was talking about how, you know, unfortunate the Chargers were last week. And I get it. In the final moments, that could be said. But the Titans were up double digits late. They blew that game, right? The first three quarters, like Tennessee outgained the Chargers by 2.3 yards per play. The Titans were a net positive 16% in success rate. So the Chargers have to start faster this week. And it wasn't like it was like this bad time slot. I get they were on the East Coast, but it was a 4 o'clock start. So you didn't even have that to worry about. And they still weren't very good for the first three quarters of that game offensively. So hopefully Austin Eckler can help that out. Defensively for Chicago, and you hate to make this sound this easy, but Matt Nagy came out this week and said, hey, we're playing soft right now. And he questioned some of the effort. Roquan Smith hasn't been that same dude in the middle of the defense, and that's on top of, obviously, you know, we keep mentioning his name because it's really important, Akeem Hicks being out. But Roquan Smith only played 69% of snaps last week. And all of the metrics kind of agree with what Matt Nagy's saying. First four games of the season, Chicago is allowing 46% of runs to great successful. Last two games, 55%. Chicago's secondary has regressed year over year dramatically. It's probably a combination of effort, you know, probably a combination of, you know, coaching change scheme. But the schedule, that's one thing that you just really have to pay close attention to in the NFL. And so through 7 weeks right now, Chicago's defense has faced the 10th toughest schedule of offenses last season, 10 easiest. So they're having a tough time adjusting to that. But I think we'll know pretty early on here if the energy and effort is there defensively for the Bears. I know there was like this little come to Jesus meeting among all the players this week. Matt Nagy kind of commented and was like, hey, you know, whatever works. I'm with it. I'm with it. If they think it's needed, if they didn't think it was needed, I'm fine with that, too. So it'll be pretty telling, because if the Chargers come out and they're suddenly able to run, it's going to tell you all you need to know.
On the other side of the ball, we know the Bears have really struggled to do much of anything offensively. I mean, third down conversions have been a nightmare. Mitchell Trubisky's passer rating this season, 26th in the NFL amongst qualified quarterbacks, down, you know, a substantial amount from last season. He's only thrown for more than 250 yards once, Payne, in five games so far this campaign. But the Chargers' defense hasn't exactly been up to snuff. However, they may get a little bit of injury reinforcements with a key contributor potentially being available this weekend.
You're spot on. I mean, Mitchell Trubisky has been horrific and he's regressed again. And there was a lot of these underlying metrics that people were like crushing me for during a preview podcast. I said, hey, this stuff doesn't look really good, even though the you know, the box score stuff looks great. And, you know, the passer rating stuff looks great. There's a lot of underlying metrics that were horrific last year. Matt Nagy's offense, you know, really hasn't had as much punch either. Maybe he's lacking the adjustments. I don't know. But I think the other thing here is, again, back to schedules. The schedule of defenses that Chicago's had to face this season offensively is significantly tougher. It was fourth easiest last season. Now it's an above average slate of defenses that they've played so far. The offensive line appears to be non-existent, right? But when you look at some of the pressure rate stuff, whether it's Chase Daniel or Trubisky, both of them been pressured about 35% of the time on their dropbacks. In terms of the run game, the line isn't really creating any holes in the ground game. Fourth worst in adjusted line yards. So, you know, there hasn't been this fallback plan when you have a struggling quarterback, because the ground game is non-existent. Only 40% of runs have graded successful this season, 7% below league average. I know a lot of fans, and even we got some input from former running back there, Thomas Jones. He's like, we got to see this Bears offense use a fullback. I get it. And the Patriots have been wildly successful with that formula the last few seasons. But, like, that's not the kind of offense Matt Nagy runs. You knew that when you hired him. There are now, I guess, if you're a Trubisky fan or you're looking for hope as a Bears fan, there are some like indicators that suggest Trubisky, you know, tends to bounce back after a poor effort or when he's called out. And I know Matt Nagy claims that he doesn't handle tough love overly well. But if you look Monday night in front of a national audience, when Matt Nagy cursed him out after the first quarter, he seemed to pick things up. Then there was an article that I was reading that was actually published this week. And it came last season. Michael Lombardi kind of publicly said about Mitch Trubisky, you couldn't get me to buy Mitchell Trubisky if you had him on a discount rack, right?
Filene's basement, baby. I don't even know if Filene's is still in business.
Yeah. He said he can't throw the ball inbounds half the time, and he's a joke. Trubisky followed that up, right? In week 10, he had a performance against the Lions where he went for 11.2 yards per pass, hit eight explosives, and had a 58% success rate. Week 14 last year, this article said that Trubisky was terrible against the Rams. Then the following 2 weeks combined against the Packers and 49ers, Trubisky completed 79% of his passes with a 117 passer rating. So, you know, let's see if he can bounce back here. Mitch, to your point, is facing a decimated Charger secondary. They've allowed 52% of passes to grade successful, fourth worst in the NFL. So there's going to be some opportunities here. Unfortunately for Mitch and the Bears offense, it does sound like Melvin Ingram could be back, right? He's practicing this week. Anthony Lynn said he's real close. I think Ingram's a nice piece to have back, especially when you look at Trubisky, 38 passer rating when pressured. He has been horrific when under pressured. Just, it's not registering for him upstairs. He's not playing quickly. you just kind of take a little glance around social media. A lot of guys that are breaking down film, it's ugly. There are guys just wide open. He refuses to throw the ball. He's just not seeing it. He's not releasing the ball. Confidence is shot right now. So from that perspective, I can understand why guys are gravitating a little bit towards the Chiefs. However, I big picture here, I absolutely hate what Anthony Lynn did. Didn't stay on the East Coast. Went back out West. So that's making me a little hesitant.
Weird, weird football game on a number of levels. When you look at the Chargers, though, going back to 2012, they've been the true road warriors by the NFL's definition, yep, and the only one that matters, covering an NFL high 63% of their games. And it's pretty impressive when you consider the fact that the Chargers have no home field advantage. So it probably doesn't really change where they elect to play these particular football games.
That's the point right there. Yeah, they're used to not playing at home. And because the market doesn't value them at home, God, little general nugget here, probably shouldn't be divulging this, that there's tends to be a little more value when they hit the highway.
Hey, every now and again, you got to find every little angle to get you to the window one way or another. A team that didn't get anybody to the window last weekend, and you probably could have gone to sleep after the first quarter, was if you were holding a ticket on the Philadelphia Eagles after they were drummed by the Dallas Cowboys. They finish up their three-game road trip in Western New York against the Buffalo Bills. We're looking at Buffalo, a 2.5-point favorite Fox bet. Total in this game, 43 pain. And over the past week, you've had an anonymous Eagles player question Carson Wentz. Lane Johnson's revealed that players were late to practice in meetings. Doug Peterson's been accused of losing the locker room. But the Bills, on the other hand, were able to get by the Dolphins with a 22-point outburst in the fourth quarter. While it is their best record through the first six games of the season, going all the way back to 2008, I mean, the Bills have been the cardiac kids, needing comebacks against an inferior schedule to achieve this record. Something has to give this weekend, and I'm not sure where you want to start.
Start with the Eagles offense, because I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. That's supposed to be the unit that leads this team, and I think last week, you know, there's a lot of self-destruction there. I think you can fix some of the things. Right, there's a fumble here or there. There's like a lack of concentration from Wentz, kind of receiving a snap and just not paying attention. There's poor effort by the receivers. All that stuff seems to be fixable unless what is being rumored is absolutely true, right? That there's some guys that don't love Wentz. There's some quit in the locker room. On paper, this is a tough matchup for the Eagles offense, right? And as much as I love like throwing the ball because it's just way more efficient, when you look at where you want to attack the Bills defense right now and where they're most vulnerable, it's on the ground. 23rd in defensive rush efficiency. But they're top five against the pass in like the three key categories: efficiency, success rate allowed, explosive passing. So, you know, you look at Alshon Jeffrey and Nelson Aguilar, they both need to step up, but they're at this point, they're like B and C type options. So, you know, I don't think the strategy here is to force feed those two guys in this specific matchup, right? We know that Philadelphia likes to use its tight ends, whether it's Ertz or Goddard or both of them on the field and 12 personnel at the same time. But Buffalo's been fantastic defending tight ends, too. Only allowed 17 receptions this season and a 78 passer rating to the tight end position. So for me, I think it's important to get Jordan Howard going, get Miles Sanders going on the ground. Maybe Miles Sanders can break a long one or two. The Bills are 29th in explosive run defense. So I think you want to get the ground game going, get the offense kind of their offensive line. It's so wild to me. Extremely talented, just has never been like that dominant unit you thought they could be. Peters has constantly been in and out of the lineup. I do like Dillard. There were some question marks. People didn't think he was ready. One of the best young offensive tackles in football in my mind, Lane Johnson. He just needs to get it figured out. It's odd that he's the guy doing all the talking this week, right? Wasn't he the guy that got burnt early in the game, created the fumble?
Yep. Indeed,
and
he was.
He's unbearable. And I, you know, hate to put this out there, but like no one likes the guy. So it's not shocking that he's the one talking about the locker room and how guys aren't doing this and that. How about you block your guy and not give up a sack fumble? Maybe do that and then, you know, before you start running your mouth. There you go. There's my little rant on Lane Johnson.
Well, I can appreciate that because you mentioned Philadelphia's offense.
It drives me nuts. Like, if you're going to talk, like, at least not, don't be the guy that gives up the sack and the fumble.
And clearly this Eagles offense has lacked the big play potential without DeSean Jackson. Carson Wentz, three games this season with fewer than 200 passing yards, was mediocre at best last week against the Cowboys. Couldn't even pick up stats in garbage time. It was almost as though once the Eagles got down, they kind of checked out. But the matchup in this game, Payne, that I think is fascinating for a number of reasons. The Eagles' secondary has been their biggest weakness. They've allowed 24 or more points in every game this season except against the lowly Jets. They've given up yards in chunks each of the last 2 weeks against Dallas and Minnesota, 300 rushing in total, 538 yards in passing. What I found fascinating is that both Sidney Jones and Ronald Darby were active against the Cowboys. Neither saw the field. Clearly, those guys are getting healthier, or Coach Peterson has more confidence when you release Orlando Scandrick. Does Buffalo have enough in the vertical passing game with John Brown, Cole Beasley, hey, he is what he is, to exploit Philadelphia's weaknesses on the defensive side?
Hey, Cole Beasley right now is creating the most separation of any of the Buffalo receivers that are seeing significant time. So kudos to him. He continues to be a great route runner. To your point, though, right? Josh Allen's going to have to be effective here because it's good on good in terms of the Bills' ability to run the ball and the Eagles' ability to stop the run. And I know if you're kind of just watching one singular data point in one game that's on national television, it's clear the Eagles got pushed around and kind of mauled in the trenches on Sunday night. But like, stopping the run has been a strength for the Eagles for like multiple seasons, including this season prior to last week. So, you know, even with that really bad data point in there against the Cowboys, you know, Philadelphia's still top 10 in rushing efficiency defense and rushing success rate defense. So it's clear like Josh Allen has to be able to beat this defense. And I think, you know, when he's got a complimentary ground game, that's when he's at his best. So hopefully if you're an Eagles fan, they remove that. When he doesn't have that complimentary ground game, you know, he can't use play action as much. And we've seen when he is able to use play action that Allen is just a much better quarterback. Completion percentage increases 10%. Passer rating is up 33 points. You would have to believe that, you know, Jim Schwartz is going to make Josh Allen beat his defense, right? Force Allen to line up in the shotgun. You know, make him do things that there's question marks about still, right? Survey the field. Read the entire field. Make a decision pre-snap and post-snap, you know, mentally. Deliver the ball accurately. Those are things that we're still have questions about with Josh Allen. To Allen's credit, though, the accuracy and footwork have improved a little bit, right? It's clear when he's not pressured that these things have improved greatly because he's 11th best in adjusted completion percentage among all quarterbacks that have started at least five games. So Josh Allen is improving in that area. But the two things that you need to just remove to kind of get Josh Allen back in his old form and where he tends to crumble, force him to beat you deep and get some pressure. And right now, when you look at Josh Allen, 32% adjusted completion percentage on deep throws, it's 27th in the NFL. And then you get pressure on Josh Allen any way you can because he's got a 51 passer rating when pressured. The mechanics, the footwork that he's kind of spent the entire offseason improving, they go out to the window like when the heat's on. That's just kind of what I've seen so far. So you look when he's got pressure on him, completing 46% of his passes, has a 2-to-1 interception to touchdown ratio and pressure as well. So we know Philadelphia does a good job creating pressure. They've graded out the 6th best team in that regard. So get pressure, stop the run. Josh Allen looks like a different human.
Last thing on this campaign, what does the number tell you about how the market's assessing these two teams through this point in the season?
Still says Philadelphia's better, so which is interesting. There aren't a lot of people believing in Buffalo. It is a team that I have really been higher on than most. I really love McDermott. I think he's a good coach. We kind of saw this in coming now. Did I think 5-1? No, and there's real potential for them to be 6-0 because you can make a case that they outplayed the Patriots for a good portion of that game. But there's still belief. In Philadelphia, they have shown an ability to kind of turn it on at times. They have the championship pedigree. A lot of that locker room, a lot of that team is remaining from those championship teams. So, and candidly speaking, I think 2.5 is probably the right number. And I'm intrigued to see where this actually goes. But just looking at our power numbers, we do have Philadelphia still slightly better than Buffalo. But Buffalo does have a good home field advantage. And when they are good, or I shouldn't even, they don't even have to be good, when they're at least competing for the playoffs, which could mean, you know, a game below 500, their home field advantage continues to increase throughout the course of the season as the months get colder.
And we'll see. Buffalo's able to get through Philadelphia this weekend. Their schedule not exactly daunting in upcoming weeks, where they'll be home against the Redskins next week, on the road at the Browns. They head down to your neck of the woods to take on the Dolphins and then host the Broncos in late November. So the sky potentially becomes the limit for Buffalo getting into a very muddled AFC playoff picture, where aside from the Patriots and Chiefs, most likely, nobody has emerged as true front runners on that side of the draw. Out west we go for an afternoon kickoff, where Carolina, fresh off the bye, will go to the Bay Area to take on the San Francisco 49ers. You're looking at San Francisco, a 5.5-point favorite at FoxBet. Total on this game, 42. Ron Rivera comes out pretty early in the week, Payne, says, hey, Kyle Allen will remain our starting quarterback. We're going to bring Cam Newton back slowly. Whatever that may mean for Cam's involvement in this offense going forward remains anyone's best guess, but I think we can all kind of read between the tea leaves. When we look at what Allen's been able to accomplish, fourth best passer rating in the league since taking over. He's yet to throw an interception. That being said, I think you and I have watched and we cringe sometimes with his lack of pocket presence, because he has been prone to the hit, the fumble. He's going to have his hands full against a 49ers defense that's got to be foaming at the mouth to make a statement, and that has been absolutely electric against the pass over the last 3 weeks.
Yes, you are spot on. And you lobbed that perfectly. When I saw your notes, I was like, man, he's going to ask me something here that he wants me to divulge. But I'm not sure I can. So Cam supposedly needs to be 100% before he returns. Let's see how this shakes up. I can tell you that organization is very fond of Kyle Allen right now. And very good passer. He has been a good decision maker. Accuracy has been very good, right? Eighth in completion percentage above expectation so far. 7 touchdowns, no picks. Now, to your point, obviously, you know, Allen needs to do some work in terms of protecting the football. 6 fumbles isn't good. The larger problem here, though, and you hit this perfectly, why the fumbles are happening is because Allen is still a work in progress when it comes to his pocket presence, when it comes to his awareness. And overall, I think when we made this assessment a few months back on the value of Kyle Allen versus Cam Newton, we said there was zero drop-off, because at that point, the comparison wasn't a mobile Cam, right? It was pocket passer Kyle Allen versus pocket passer Cam Newton. And I think we were probably wrong, even though we were ahead of the market. Kyle Allen's proven to be an upgrade as a pocket passer. Now, let's see what he does this week, because you look at the schedule so far in the 4 games that Allen's played. It's Tampa's secondary, 25th against the pass. It's Arizona's secondary, 26th. Houston's secondary, 22nd. And those are all passing efficiency metrics defensively. The only above average secondary that Kyle Allen's faced so far was Jacksonville, and that was without Ramsey. And he averaged 4.6 yards a pass attempt, registered 44% success rate. This is a completely different animal that he's going against here with the 49ers defense. And they are number 2 in defensive pass efficiency. Across the board, you just look, number 1 in passing success rate defense. They're literally allowing 30% of passes to great successful. It's 16% better than league average. And so I started digging around into those numbers a little bit, and I was like, okay, maybe the monsoon data point of last week is really contributing to that. And it's like, nope, very little impact. Like, San Francisco's number 1 in passing success rate defense prior to the Redskins game as well. And so you start poking around even more. And I think the reason why, you know, the 49ers defense has been so good, especially against the pass, it's because right now they have an ability to get pressure with their front 4, right? And in terms of defenses with the highest pressure rate while blitzing the least amount, the 49ers are number 1 in the NFL. So, you know, it allows you to play coverage and not leave yourself vulnerable and exposed when you blitz. Richard Sherman as well, by the way, he has returned closer to his Seattle form, 2 years removed from the Achilles. So that's definitely helped. I think when you look at the matchup, it's vital. Like, it's important that McCaffrey gets going on the ground. I think the bye week did his body well. Now, removing the monsoon game from what San Francisco's done defensively against the run, they were 18th in rushing success rate prior to last week. To date, they've faced the seventh easiest schedule of run offenses. So I think there could be some areas here where Carolina can attack San Francisco on the ground and get things going. Looking metrically, though, the 49ers are probably going to be able to remove McCaffrey from the pass game. That's got to be a goal of every defense. And you look this season, right now, 5.1 yards allowed per target to running backs catching the ball, only 19 receptions allowed, 139 total receiving yards to running backs. They're the only defense in the NFL that hasn't allowed 200 or more receiving yards to running backs yet, Todd.
That's it's always tricky then, because that's Kyle Allen's security blanket, and it'll put the onus on guys like DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel downfield. They'll have to get back to basics with Greg Olsen. And just to give you a little bit more historical context, too, on how well this 49ers defense has played, they've allowed just 64 points this season, second fewest after six games in franchise history. You have to go all the way back to 1976 when they had a better performance. And the fact that they've held three straight opponents to seven or fewer points in less than 200 yards, they're the sixth team to do that since 1990. It hasn't been accomplished since 2005 by the New England Patriots. So schedule may not be the most daunting. The monsoon may have contributed, but you look at their performance against the Rams and Jared Goff on the road on a short week and what they did to Baker Mayfield, you have to believe this 49ers defense is for real. On the other side, Payne, we haven't seen Jimmy Garoppolo at his absolute best, and he hasn't had to be thus far, as the team's averaged 173 yards per game and 7.7 yards per pass attempt. So they've been efficient when they do elect to try and throw. You get a little bit more pop there with Emmanuel Sanders. I know he's not a spring chicken in his early 30s, but how do you see the 49ers offense matching up against a Carolina defense that was gashed by Leonard Fournette in one game and has shown some vulnerabilities in the passing and, you know, allowing opposing quarterbacks to have some success?
Well, you're spot on in that assessment. And, you know, when you look at Kyle Shanahan, he's a brilliant offensive mind. But to your point, he loves getting the ground game going. We've seen him spend big money on Jerick McKinnon, who has not played a single meaningful snap. Went out and got Coleman the offseason, someone he was, you know, familiar with from his Falcons days. He's got Matthew Breida going. So they like to run the ball. And that's something that Carolina has got to fix, because once Kawan Short went out, their big stud defensive tackle, they have struggled stopping the run. They were above average the first 2 weeks with Kawan Short, 14th in rushing success rate defense. With him out, they've dropped to 31st in rushing success rate defense. It's been an 8% decline. So they've had to have figured something out during this bye week to, you know, help stop the run here. The other thing that we talk about, when you're without your left tackle, Joe Staley, you're without your right tackle, Mike McGlinchey, your fullback, Kyle Juszczyk, Carolina has to figure out how they're going to get pressure on Jimmy Garoppolo. And that could be a little tougher, because we have to monitor the Brian Burns situation. He's been an outstanding asset. They drafted him in the first round. I'm shocked that he's been this good, but he's been their best pass rusher by so far. He had wrist surgery during the bye week, hasn't practiced yet. Let's see if he goes, because if he's not there, could make things tougher in terms of Carolina creating pressure and taking advantage of both tackles being out. You mentioned Emmanuel Sanders. I know this was someone that was on the 49ers radar for a few months now. He's obviously, I think, still very good. He's a professional. He's a good locker room guy. I think the integration of him into the offense is probably going to be pretty seamless, right? That transition shouldn't take a lot of time. And when you kind of dig into that backstory a little bit, in 2017, when Kyle Shanahan got the San Francisco job, he hired Rich Scangarello as his quarterback's coach and to help with the offense. You fast forward to present day 2019, Rich Scangarello was hired as the Broncos offensive coordinator. So Emmanuel Sanders has been in this system for, you know, 7 weeks actively, and he's had his head in the playbook with this new system since the offseason. We know, you know, he couldn't do a ton physically in the offseason coming back from the Achilles and the ankle surgery. So, you know, I don't think this is going to take long to get him going in this offense, Todd. And I think it's a big upgrade, because right now the receiver unit just, you know, they're still young right now. I think it's potentially going to be good, right? Jalen Hurd could be a stud. Debo Samuel could be a stud. But they're young guys. So now you get this veteran presence there. Not only is he going to help on the field, but I think he's going to really help those young guys take the next step in their maturation.
Yeah, they're definitely, when you look at the 49ers and some of their struggles there, I mean, it was no shock that they went out there and addressed one of their major positions of need. I mean, this is a team that really hadn't utilized the wide receivers at all. In fact, the 49ers were a team with the fewest receptions from their wide receivers in the NFL so far this season, with just 49. So clearly Emmanuel Sanders should help in that regard. We'll see if it benefits the likes of Dante Pettis and some of the guys that you mentioned there as well.
Pettis was supposed to be the stud, right? He was supposed to be like this elite route runner. We were all waiting for him to like take that next step. And I know he's a little dinged up this offseason and through training camp, but man, that's been a little disappointing.
Yeah, dinged up or not, he's never really materialized into what I think the 49ers believed he was going to be, and it necessitated them going out there and getting Sanders, given the undefeated start, hoping that they can continue to handle Prosperity and be a real force in the NFC because of how good that defense has been and what the expectations are on that side of the ball. But when you talk about good defenses in the NFL, Payne, I think it all starts and stops with the New England Patriots so far in 2019. And it's part of the reason that New England is a 13-point favorite as they welcome in the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland fresh off the bye. New England a short week. Total in this game, 46 at FoxBet. And for the third time under head coach Bill Belichick, the Patriots have started a season 7-0. But what's interesting about this is the offense has been pretty average. And average may actually be a leap of faith, but it hasn't stopped them from absolutely taking care of business at home. They're 11-0 in their own building since the start of last year, won 8 out of those 11 games by 14-plus points, and the average margin of victory in the last four home games, 25.5 points. Can that prosperity continue? Because odds makers have clearly decided they need to inflate the Patriots to ensure that they're going to see at least a trickling of Browns money come Sunday.
You led us in the right spot here with the Patriots offense, and there has been a huge change in the number, right? Cleveland didn't play last week. They were on a bye. So it's amazing what a national spotlight game does to a number. And 33-0, it looks great on the scoreboard for, you know, a guy that's a scoreboard watcher. But you actually dig into the metrics. You listen to what Tom Brady is saying. You focus on, you know, Bill Belichick's actions. And those three things, to me, really paint a different picture than what the national perception is in my mind. And you start to dig into some of these numbers. Tom Brady on Monday night, 5.5 yards per pass attempt. If that was the season-long number, New England would be 29th in the NFL in that category. The ground game, non-existent. 32 carries for 76 yards. Julian Edelman was the most efficient runner Monday night. Between Sony Michel, James White, Brandon Bolden, and the rookie kid there from Alabama, Damian Harris, those four backs, 29 carries for 56 total yards. And then you listen to Tom Brady after the game. He was asked about the offense. He kept deflecting. He kept praising the defense. And then less than 12 hours after the 33-0, Belichick finally pulls the trigger on the Mohamed Sanu trade, right? And that's something that had been kind of in the works since the offseason. So, you know, both those guys know what this offense is right now. The only thing that really is saving the Patriots offense is how good they are situationally. And we saw that again Monday night right away, right? 3rd and 10, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 5, 4th and 6. Those are all situations where, like, individually, the Jets have an edge. New England converted all of them, and that's why the Jets were down double digits in a blink of an eye. So, you know, situationally, they've been very good. When you quickly kind of transition to this game, it's a short week for New England, obviously, and travel. Stephen Wilkes has had 2 weeks to prepare for the New England offense. You'd hope that this makes this an even schematic fight, right? 2 weeks versus 6 days in travel.
That's not going to be the case. They could have 2 years and it still wouldn't bridge the gap.
Man, you're on the national narrative that the Browns are poorly coached. Listen, what I have seen... And back to Stephen Wilkes, back to his defense, I think you give the Browns credit, right? Despite all the secondary issues and injuries, they've also faced the 11th toughest schedule of passing offenses. Cleveland's only allowed a 44% passing success rate. That's 10th best in the NFL. Now you get back both Greedy Williams and Denzel Ward. So the bye week has been beneficial in that regard in my mind. Cleveland does need to figure out, though, what the hell is going on with their run defense, because that's been the problem. You have this like stout defensive line everyone is raving about. They're having issues there. 25th in rushing efficiency defense, 19th rushing success rate defense, 28th explosive run defense. So the question becomes, is the way the Patriots are playing right now, right? They want to establish the run more than like years past. And again, 2 weeks to prepare. Maybe you work on assignment football over that time. Maybe you make sure your gap integrity is probably a little bit more sound. And you're facing a Patriots ground attack that hasn't been overly efficient recently without Wynn and Andrews and Delvin. So it's regressed in that regard. So that's going to be the key to this side of the ball. Can you stop the run and make the Patriots one-dimensional? If you can, you have a chance, because there really isn't much explosiveness in the way of the pass game right now for New England.
No, and they'll have a pass rusher too in Myles Garrett, who you think can apply pressure, get Tom Brady off his spot, and disrupt some of the flow that the Patriots will be looking to establish. Now, at the same time, I think the Browns' job defensively may be reasonable and our expectations there. The real question I have is, can Baker Mayfield and Freddie Kitchens solve what's been ailing this sluggish offense against the Patriots' defense right now that probably needs no further accolades given some of the schedule they've taken on, but to their credit that they have passed every test with flying colors so far. Points per game allowed less than 7. Yards per game allowed less than 224. Yards per play allowed 4. Third down percentage allowed 14.3. Defense has allowed 1 passing touchdown while forcing 18 interceptions. They have an NFL best 22 takeaways. And as we've seen early on, Baker Mayfield has been prone to making the bad decision, whether it's forcing the ball to Odell Beckham or not reading defenses the right way. He should be healthier this week than the last time we saw him on the football field. But can Cleveland do enough to be balanced offensively? And can they be patient, realizing that punting isn't the worst case scenario if it means forcing New England to drive the length of the field?
Totally agree. That's the big thing here. Don't turn it over. Don't make the mistake. Don't set up the short field. Don't put your defense in poor situations. My hope is that during the bye week, Freddie Kitchens and Todd Monken came together and figured out what kind of offense they want to run, because there's been this like hybrid so far and it's just not working, right? Like, you look, Kitchens really improved this offense when he took over last season, and it was mostly because the protection got really better, and it's because of there's a lot of short passes, there's a lot of 12 formation with help from tight ends blocking. Monken, while he's a great offensive mind, he comes from somewhere completely different. They speak two different languages, right? He wants to run 11, 3 wide receiver sets. He wants to protect with 5. Right now, the Browns roster isn't set up to run 11 consistently. So they're just not good enough protecting Baker. That extra tight end is needed. The route running needs to be shortened up a little bit. It can't just be deep bombs. That's really, you know, it feels like there's this battle there where Freddie Kitchens really wants to allow Monken to implement his offense. It's just not working right now. So I think, you know, it's important to get back to 12. It's important to get back to the quick passing game. Help your offensive line out. Help Baker out. It's also important to get Nick Chubb going, right? That's easier said than done, though, right? I think a lot of people are like, hey, you know, just hand it off to Nick Chubb. The Browns aren't creating a ton of room for their backs right now. 17th in adjusted line yards. And Nick Chubb, while the yards per attempt look good, while the overall rushing yards look decent, he's delivering a 37% success rate on his runs. That's 10% below league average. So again, like, you know, it sounds nice. Baker's struggling. Just hand it off to Chubb. You hope it's that easy. I know there's been some whispers this week about some of the parts along the O-line changing a little bit during the bye, maybe at left tackle. We'll see. But Baker needs 12 personnel, right? The offense needs to really focus on short passes. Chubb needs to get it rolling. If you can do those two things, then you get Baker kind of operating with play action, and that's where he's been most comfortable. It's not even close. When you look at like the qualifying quarterbacks that have played enough games, I think it's 5 we're looking for. Mayfield has the largest dichotomy when it comes to throwing with play action versus without that play fake element. His completion percentage increases almost 15%. Passer rating goes up 28 points as well. And, you know, you can just go back to Monday night when we broke down the Patriots defensively. The one place to attack them really is with the short passing. Adam Gase did not choose to go that route. It was a lot of deep passing. It was a lot of targeting.
I think Demaryius Sam Darnold Thomas. Just intercepted again.
It was a lot of targeting Demaryius Thomas, who at this point in his career, if you're targeting him that often, you're in trouble. Metrically speaking, though, obviously a tough task. Right at this very moment, New England has the best defense of all time metrically. Now, we're only in week 7. And they have faced the various you know, easiest schedule of opposing offenses. And you just look at this murderer's row of quarterbacks here. Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Luke Falk, Colt McCoy, Daniel Jones, and then the aforementioned Sam Darnold there on Monday night. So that helps a little bit. You could see this improvement coming, especially when you read the tea leaves, right? Like, Belichick didn't hire a defensive coordinator to replace Brian Flores, which meant more Bill Belichick, and he was going to have his hands on this defense a little bit more. So that's the reason we've seen this drastic improvement for New England defensively. But that's the key here. Get the short passing game going. Try to get Chubb going. And even, you know, I hate to say this because, you know, 3 or 4 yards on first down isn't what we're looking for. But if you can do that, at least you make the Patriots defend both the run and pass. So if you can get 3 or 4 yards on average, then you get Baker operating from 12 personnel with play action, you might have a chance here.
Hey, the Browns need every chance they can get, and these Patriot numbers starting to get out of control. But when you look at New England's dominance from an against the spread standpoint, they clearly haven't shied away from being good to betters, going 11-3 against the spread the last 14 games, paying that they've entered as a double-digit favorite. What that tells me is that the Patriots don't beat themselves, and typically if a team has inferior talent or coaching, they struggle immensely to try and level the playing field. So we'll see if that prosperity continues for New England on Sunday. Quick hits on the Sunday night football game, and we'll of course get to Thursday night football, but all sorts of speculation swirling in Arrowhead. Will he or won't he be out there? That man, of course, being Patrick Mahomes. We now have Green Bay, 3.5-point favorite at Fox Bet on the road against Kansas City. Total in this game, 47.5. Market did it get as high as 5. Handicapping this game obviously takes on a variety of different angles. Don't want to spend a ton of time here because we're not here to speculate. We're better off dealing with what we know as known commodities. What are your expectations, and do we really think that Mahomes is going to get out there and try and give it a go with that dislocated kneecap less than 10 days after it occurred?
You made that sound really painful. I hope not.
A dislocated kneecap is painful.
I sure hope not, but I saw him out there yesterday at practice. He's like stretching the thing. It just makes me really nervous. I don't know why they would rush him back. I know he's a tough guy. He wants to be out there for his guys. But I'm hoping he sits this one out. And so when you kind of just focus on the number here, we saw a look-ahead line. It was Kansas City -4. That look-ahead number kind of incorporated an already beat-up Patty Mahomes. And so I know it goes through the zero, but we got as high as Green Bay -5 just yesterday. And then the video surfaces of Mahomes practicing and there were some professional bettors that got a little antsy and grabbed Kansas City at 5 and 4.5 and even some 4. And then the markets adjust a little bit seeing him practice, right? There's this kind of hybrid number. But in my mind, as much as I love Patty Mahomes, when you're looking at Kansas City going from 4 to as high as 5, we're talking about a 9-point adjustment. I know, again, it's through the zero, but it's also through both threes. I don't think that there's that much of an adjustment. I really don't. And when you think about Matt Moore as a veteran quarterback, as a gunslinger, as someone who has now had 10 days to prepare and have Andy Reid devise a game plan for one specific opponent, and you have a Kansas City team who has a above average home field advantage and a Green Bay team who's coming on the road, who also has an above average home field advantage, which kind of distorts things even a little bit more, you can see that there is value on Kansas City. At this point, though, I think the best is to kind of hold out and wait here. It's Sunday night football. If Mahomes doesn't play, I think you get back to a number of at least 5. And then you're probably finding yourself on the value side with Kansas City. If Mahomes gets upgraded and Kansas City heads back to a favorite, could change things dramatically to where Green Bay has some value. I think this is really just a numbers play, right? We could break this game down ad nauseum, right? Green Bay is going to have to be able to run the ball here. I know Kansas City has struggled to stop the run, although last week they heard everyone calling them out. Couldn't stop the run. Couldn't get off the field against the Texans. They had a players meeting defensively. They were able to stop the run very well in that game. And if Mahomes is out, usually you get that one game where everyone steps up their game. And then you look defensively for the Chiefs. It's one thing we've kind of been saying, hey, quietly look at this. The secondary is actually pretty good. And right now you're looking at the fourth best secondary in terms of defensive pass efficiency. So if they were able to at least compete with Green Bay's passing game, you could see even more value on the Kansas City side if Mahomes were out. Now, I don't know if their secondary is that good when you look at the schedule of passers that they've played, but it's certainly much improved from last season year over year, that Kansas City secondary.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me at all either if some of this was postulating from Kansas City, letting that video of Mahomes leak, forcing Green Bay to prepare for both quarterbacks.
Absolutely.
And using that element of surprise. But we'll see what unfolds Sunday night. Hopefully a lot more intriguing than what I think will unfold tonight, where the Minnesota Vikings play host to the Washington Redskins. They are a massive 17-point favorite, total in the game 42.5 at Foxbet, and we've seen Kirk Cousins at his absolute best over the last 3 weeks, a passer rating north of 145, 300-plus passing yards, really feasting on play action, and so Gary Kubiak and Kevin Stefanski deserve a ton of credit for how this offense has looked. We know what Dalvin Cook has accomplished, 25 carries, 142 yards in the win against the Lions, now leads the league in rushing and yards per game. Everything the Vikings are doing right now appears to be clicking offensively. Here come the Redskins, quarterbacks that are familiar with one another. Kirk Cousins, obviously formerly of the Redskins. Case Keenum, formerly of the Vikings. Don't want to spend a whole lot of time here, Payne. In a quick 90-second handicap or so, what are you looking for tonight in this game?
Case Keenum revenge game, baby. They threw him to the wolves, didn't want him. Took him to the playoffs. Hopefully Bill Callahan unleashes Case Keenum, because right now Bill Callahan likes to run the ball, a run-first guy. Unfortunately, probably doesn't look at very many metrics, because right now Washington is successful on 39% of their runs, which is 8% below league average, but, you know, that's what Bill Callahan does. So hopefully he unleashes Case Keenum a little bit, let the guy go out there, chuck the ball around, give him a chance against his former teammate. We've seen Terry McLaurin and him have this nice little chemistry. Adam Thielen appears to be out. From what I have seen so far, and I'm not on the game, but I'll just pass along the information. I've seen dog and under, but I have not invested in this game yet. Hopefully that was less than 90 seconds.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I mean, I'm impressed that we broke it down and tried to at least provide a tidbit here or there that our listeners can take advantage.
I may try and get some sleep. It's not going to shock me if I turn this puppy on and I'm like passed out mid-second quarter on the couch.
Obviously, the deep dives come on the games that are more intriguing. We know a lot of folks will be tuned into their sets, but not exactly the most attractive slate of primetime games. But that doesn't mean there aren't opportunities to make money on this particular slate. And as every week during the NFL season, our best bet comes to you courtesy of FoxBet. The biggest name in sports is now the hottest name in sports betting and one of the fastest growing betting apps out there. Whatever sports you like, betting on FoxBet has you covered. You can download the app to your smartphone from anywhere and place wagers, real money wagering on dozens of sports and events with the easy to use app in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. FoxBet, make the call, download the app today. You, of course, can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman and the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. I give you all of that to give you this. Payne, where are we going for our best bet to get in the win column in the National Football League?
It's that time. Let's go back to a very familiar team, Todd. Let's go with the Tampa Bay Bucks this week, 253. I'm personally going to be taking 3-20 on the game on the bye. The 2.5 is juiced right now. You're calling what we call it for grading, but if we want to call it 3-25 just to be nice, we can do that.
Should we go Asian handicap style and treat it like a soccer game and call it 2.75? If the game ends on a field goal, you only lose half a position.
There we go, making us dance through the raindrops.
Dance, monkey, dance.
Yeah, whatever you want to do there is fine. But that's what we're doing. We're taking Tampa 3-20 just because you look across the board right now. And whether you're in Vegas and you're at Westgate, the 2.5 is -20. If you're offshore, right, the sharper shops in the world are juiced on Tennessee. So 3-20 is easy. We can call it 3-25 if you want. Whatever floats your boat.
Yeah, we'll call it 3-25. I know we get slack for the numbers, but it always is in your best interest to shop around. So the Tampa Bay Bucks +3, -$1.25. Don't hesitate to buy to a field goal for a game that's already seen under money as this total opened 47 and it's trickled down. Any final words of wisdom, advice, or anything else you'd like to share before we close up shop today and move on to greener pastures?
That's it. Let's get the Bucks home. And also, week 9, which is next week, we'll do it on the NFL podcast a week from today, Thursday. We will announce another iTunes contest winner. So just to give you an idea of what that is, go to iTunes, you leave a 5-star review and a nice little sentence, you automatically get entered to win a Bet the Board swag pack, which is a Visa gift card, it's some gear, t-shirt, pen, you name it. And we throw all those 5-star reviews and people who left a nice little comment into an automator. Out that pops, we'll announce the winner, and that person will again get a Bet the Board swag pack, Visa gift card, t-shirt, pen, all that good stuff. So go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review and a nice little comment, automatically entered.
Nothing better than donning your Bet the Board gear when it comes to game day. For Payne Insider, I am Todd Furman. Follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. It's come Sunday afternoon with a ticket backing the Tampa Bay Bucks and our beloved Jameis Winston. We will see you at the window.